Each and every weekday morning at this time, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. We say hello and good morning to Pierre McGuire. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
I'm very well, JR. Good morning. Hello, Ian.
Good morning, Pierre.
All right, so Pierre, there's really no explaining this, Connor. How are the Winnipeg Jets going to stop Connor Brown at this point? Because that was not, you know, he's now scoring goals against Vezina Trophy winning goalies that have no business going in. Is that the definition of a heater that he's on right now?
Oh, he's smoking right now. I'll never forget when Mike Babcock was coaching Toronto. Austin Matthews was playing on a line with Connor Brown and Zach Hyman, and Mike used to say to me all the time, look at Austin, he's playing with the animals. He's talking about Connor Brown and Zach Hyman, and he said that as a term of endearment because of how hard and how diligent they played the game. And you can see the reward, obviously, for Zach Hyman, who's played fantastically well for Toronto for a long time now. And for Connor Brown, you can just see it's not just the hard hitting, and it's not just the penalty killing. It's not just the role playing. It's the scoring as well. He's just getting the puck, and he's shooting it on goal, and he's not missing the net. And because he's not missing the net, not because he's not overthinking the game, he's being rewarded for it. So he's always been a really hard, in-your-face player. But, man, oh, man, it's fun to see him get rewarded offensively. I couldn't be more happy for a player like that.
Let's stick with the Sens, and they did move Erik Gudbranson yesterday, Pierre, to the Nashville Predators for a seventh-round pick down the road. I'm just curious where you think the fit is with Gudbranson in Nashville.
Well, they just want physicality in the back end. They want to obviously try to have enough depth if they do make the playoffs. So I think more than anything else, they just wanted to make sure that they had a bigger body that could play a robust style of game. They have Mark Borowiecki down there. They're trying, I think, more than anything else, just to be a team that's harder to play against physically, and Erik definitely brings that.
Do you think that at the end of the day, because a month ago, it was all the Nashville Predator players that were at the top of the TSN trade bait list, headed by, you know, Matthias Ekholm and several other players. Philip Forsberg was mentioned. At the end of the day, they've gone on a bit of a winning streak here. They're in a playoff spot, but it's not guaranteed. Do you think it was the right move for Nashville to stay the course, keep their players, and try to make the playoffs?
100%. They're trying to gain market credibility. They've got some new people involved in their ownership group. David Poyle's obviously not getting any younger. He had that trip to the final in 2017 with Nashville where they lost to Pittsburgh. But I think, you know what, they've done some real good things there in terms of drafting over time. And they're starting to get some of their players back healthy, and they want to give themselves a chance to be in the playoffs. And you know what, once you get in the playoffs, it's like the lottery. You got to be in it to win it. And if you get in the playoffs, anything can happen. So I respect the fact that their ownership group really wants to get after it, and that their management people want to get after it.
As JR mentioned in his update, Pierre, this was the quietest NHL trade deadline since the year 2000. But we did have a rather significant deal that came in right at the wire. Washington and Detroit. Anthony Mantha goes from Detroit to Washington in exchange for Jakub Vrána, Richard Panik, and then a first-round pick this year to Detroit and a second-rounder next year to Detroit. A pretty significant trade. What's your takeaway from this Washington-Detroit deal?
Short-term, it really helps Washington. I think people are going to see the real Anthony Mantha, the one that a lot of Canadian fans saw at the World Championship a few years ago, where he had a fantastic World Championship. He's never played an NHL playoff game. He's been kicked in the teeth a lot. It hasn't been a lot of fun being around the Red Wings because of the rebuild they're going through, and it's been a constant rebuild for a while. I think they're on the right track now. Steve Yzerman's got a real good plan in place with Chris Draper, so I think that's real positive for Detroit. The fact that they accumulated draft picks is great. Panik is just a player that just came off a waiver, so I don't think there was much use for him in Washington anyways. We'll see how he pans out in Detroit long-term, no pun intended. And, the biggest thing with Vrána, he's got great outside speed. He can go to the net, but he needs a playmaking center to really help him utilize his skills. So we'll see what Detroit has in terms of that. But I think it's a good trade for both teams, short-term for Washington, long-term very solid for Detroit, especially if they use those draft picks well, Ian.
What changed in Detroit, though? They just signed Mantha to a long-term extension, I believe, back in November. We're, 4 or 5 months down the road. He would seem to me, Pierre, that Steve Yzerman is trying to build something there that might be the kind of player that you'd want to keep. Was the package just too enticing for him?
Probably the package was enticing for them, obviously. And I think the other thing, JR, is maybe you know, the player just wasn't that happy going through the trials and tribulations of not being a playoff player ever in the NHL. I mean, that's not an easy thing to go through. And so maybe he just became frustrated, and management sensed that, or the coaching staff sensed that. And again, I'm speculating, but something had to go against him to get him moved out of there, because I know that they had high hopes for him to be, and I really believe he will be a 30 to 40 goal scorer in Washington. I don't think he'll be, you know, a single digit goal scorer. I think he's going to be a high double digit goal scorer, especially with Backstrom and Kuznetsov there as center iceman.
You know what I thought was interesting, Pierre, as we look at the trade deadline, kind of the period around it, I felt like every team in the East Division, the Big Four, kind of made significant moves, right? We talked about Mantha going to Washington. The Islanders get Palmieri, Hall to Boston, Jeff Carter to Pittsburgh. As you now look at the post-trade deadline East Division, which a lot of people think is the most compelling, tight, competitive division, how do you kind of analyze that, and who comes out ahead in your books?
Well, Pittsburgh really made a good pickup with Jeff Carter. He fits in really well. Now it depends on whether they get Evgeny Malkin and Brandon Tanev back. If they get both those players back in Pittsburgh, they just got Teddy Bluger back. That changes the whole dynamic for their team in Pittsburgh. So they become a very difficult team to play against. In terms of Washington, I like the Mantha addition, especially short term. So we'll see again how that plays out, but Washington's going to be a tough out. There's no question in my mind they're going to be a tough out. I think the biggest thing with Boston is Taylor Hall is going to have to, you know, really put up. He has not played particularly well this year, and he did not have a good playoff last year for Arizona. So it'll be interesting to see how he does there. Curtis Lazar could have a bigger impact there than Taylor Hall. I'm not kidding you. We'll see, but he could. He really could. But the biggest thing with the Bruins, though, it has nothing to do with what they did at the deadline. It comes down to what goes on at the infirmary. They need Charlie McAvoy. They need Matt Grizzlick, and they need Brandon Carlo back. They need those three guys back on defense. Their defense is decimated. Remember Krug's in St. Louis and Charles in Washington. So basically, they lost five of their top six guys. That's almost impossible to overcome. So that's a big thing, and plus their goaltending situation. So that's a big part of what's going to go on with Boston as they go into the playoffs.
All right, before we get to the Ottawa story, there was a fair number of the kind of typical deals we see on trade deadline day, which is kind of depth pieces for late round draft picks. Was there one or two, Pierre, that you looked at and you went, I kind of like that player and that fit for that team?
Well, before the deadline, I really liked what the Islanders did. Zajac's a real good player for Barry Trotz in a playoff-type situation. He'll be very, very useful. Palmieri's a perfect New York Islander-type player. And so I really like what the Islanders did. I don't think enough people understand how well-coached they are. You know, they talk about it, but they don't really know what they're seeing. They're as well-coached as any team in the league. And so you add those two players who are extremely coachable and can bring a little bit of something different. Palmieri brings offense, and Zajac brings huge face-off presence and also penalty kill and grinding ability and defending the league ability. I really like what the Islanders did.
Just a thought, too. Last night, the Montreal Canadiens defeated Toronto, and as it stands right now, Pierre, that looks like a first-round matchup. And I'm curious how you think that those two teams would match up in a head-to-head situation, and should there be some concern among Toronto fans that the Montreal Canadiens defeated them 4-2 last night?
I wouldn't be concerned about that game at all last night if I were Toronto or Toronto's fans. It's one of those games where Toronto didn't show up the first 15 or 20 minutes, and Montreal did. I give Montreal full credit, especially after what they did on Saturday night, which was absolutely stink to join out against Winnipeg, only getting 17 shots on goal. And getting smoked by the Jets. So, no, I wouldn't worry about that. There was no Nick Foligno playing last night for Toronto. He's going to be a huge difference maker, I believe, for that team. And, you know, the difference, I think, in that series, Ian, no matter what happens, is Toronto's got Mitchell Marner, Austin Matthews, and John Tavares. Montreal doesn't have any quick strike offensive capability like those guys. They don't have any players like those three guys. And that's going to probably, if they play in the playoffs, that'll probably be the thing that separates them in the playoffs.
The one team that was really quiet yesterday that I thought was going to add somebody that really would have not pushed them over the top, but certainly made them more of a contender was Winnipeg. They only added Jordy Benn, who's more of a depth defenseman. Kevin Cheveldayoff said, quote, It sends a message to the group that we have here that we believe in you. And you can hear the opposite, right? When a general manager trades for a player, they say, we're sending a message to the group that we believe in you. That's why we traded for the player. And he's saying the opposite here. Why do you think that at the end of the day that he decided not to do something? Because Winnipeg looks to me like they're a good defenseman away from being able to run and gun with Toronto and maybe come out of that division.
Yeah, a lot of us thought that. I agree with you 100%, JR. I don't know why they did that, but remember, you know, we've talked about this a lot. I thought this was going to be a very different kind of trade deadline. I think a lot of people in the league thought it would be. It definitely was. You can see it. Go read Steve Yzerman's quotes. This was the most different trade deadline he ever went through since he's been a general manager in the league in 2010. And I would agree. I there just wasn't enough chatter. I saw it and I paid attention to it for a long time now. And I think part of it too, and it has not, this is not putting it on Winnipeg, but I'm just going to say it around the league. I've told you this before and I mean it sincerely. And I understand nobody's going to cry for the owners. I get it. The financial devastation that's gone on this year around the league is overwhelming. I don't think anybody has an idea of how painful this year is going to be for these ownership groups around the league. I just don't know how deep some of the owners really wanted to go. I'm not saying that happened in Winnipeg, but I'm just going to say that as a broad-based comment around the league. I'm just not sure. That's why I look at Carolina. Carolina is a legitimate contender to win the Cup. They are. They're a legitimate contender to win the Cup. They didn't do a thing. They did nothing. I have to believe some of that, you know, went on around the league. It's not just Carolina. It's a lot of teams around the league.
With that division, Pierre, as you look at it, Tampa, Nashville, Carolina, Florida, how important is it to finish in first place in that division? Because as I look at this, I'm thinking, as it stands right now, it's Tampa against Nashville and then Carolina, Florida. Like, if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, you would much rather take your chances with Nashville than a first-round date with Carolina or Florida, right?
100%. I think it's so important. I've talked about that on some of the games I've done in that division. You desperately do not want to finish in the 2-3 hole. I prefer to be in the 1 hole. I really would. I would not want to be in the 2-3 hole there.
All right, let's talk about the Sens yesterday. Ian mentioned off the top, Eric Goodbranson. That was not a huge surprise, but they did claim Victor Mete on waivers. We chatted a little bit with you about the possibility of that yesterday, so it comes true. Mm-hmm. I'll ask you a two-part question. First of all, are you surprised? I think Buffalo had the first dibs on him, that they chose not to bring Mete in. And secondly, now that he is going to be here, what do you think the fit is on the Ottawa defense?
I'll talk about Buffalo first. You have to remember long-term, they have Jake McCabe coming along. They have Jacob Bryson, who's an undersized defenseman out of Providence College, who they're really happy with. And Jacob Bryson's going to be a very good player. He's going to be like Matt Grizzlick. He's probably got a little bit more of an offensive game than Victor Mete does. So I think that's something to pay attention to, why Buffalo. And Buffalo also has Will Borgen coming off of injury. So I can understand why Buffalo wouldn't do it. In terms of Ottawa, I think the fit's good. I think he'll help them. I think he'll be a 12 to 14 minute a game player. I think he'll play in the 5-6 position. And he'll be a good depth defenseman. You're not going to get a lot of offense out of him. That's just not his thing.
Sticking with the Senators, Pierre, it looks like we'll see Shane Pinto and Jacob Bernard Docker play maybe as early as tomorrow. What's a realistic expectation that the fan base should have for these two young men as they transition from the NCAA into the NHL? They're going to probably get somewhere between 12 and 13 games down the stretch. Like, how should we assess them, and what should the expectations be on them?
Turn them loose, let them play. They're good players. They've been playing in an elite program for a long time. They're both elite players, and I would expect they're going to do very, very well. My expectation would be they're going to do extremely well.
Do you think that there's enough runway, whether they come in the next game, as Ian mentioned, or there's 13 games left here in Ottawa, Pierre. So if they come in on the weekend, there's a dozen games left. Is that enough time, do you believe, especially with Bernard Docker, that the Sens will have a good sense of where he is at in terms of where they could slot him in next season, be it as an NHL player for sure, or that he may not quite be ready? Is a dozen games enough?
100%, and I'm glad you brought that up. I think 8 to 10 is actually a good measuring stick for a lot of these players, especially when you have a foundation on which to study. So you're talking about major games at the NCAA level, major games at the World Junior level. It's not just a snapshot. You can see and gauge the growth of the player. So, no, the answer is, I think it's great. 12 games is perfect.
I'm also wondering here, as Ottawa's goaltending situation Marcus Hogberg is healthy. Matt Murray's on the verge of coming back. And yet, Pierre, we've seen Anton Forsberg now start three consecutive games, and that includes with Marcus Hogberg being healthy enough to back him up. Like, I look at this as the head coach is just at the point where I don't care what your name is. If you're giving us 920 save percentage, you're going to be my guy. But how important is this stretch drive for Ottawa to kind of get Matt Murray figured out? And if you're DJ Smith and you've got Anton Forsberg going really well, how tough is it to take that guy out and put in Matt Murray?
Yeah, it's really tough. Absolutely. This is a business based on results. Matt Murray hasn't delivered the results yet, so it's not easy. It's a great question. It's very fair. Matt's going to have to take care of himself and get in there and start to play.
All right, good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. I can hear you padding through the airport, so safe travels.
I am.
And yep. We'll look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Jared. Thanks a lot, Ian. Have a great day, everybody.